Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 38. The wind from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25. Tomorrow, partly sunny and windy. Look for a high of 52. The wind will be from the west at 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts to 35 miles per hour. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and colder with a low of 28 and a northwest wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Sunday, partly sunny with a high of 42. The wind will be out of the north from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunday night and Monday, partly cloudy with a low Sunday night in the mid-20s and a high Monday in the mid-40s. Monday night, mostly clear with a low around 30. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-50s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across the region ranged from the upper 30s to 50 at Carbondale. Most stations reported sunny or mostly sunny skies. At Rockford, it was 43, 42 at O'Hare, 45 in Springfield, 43 at Mattoon. Carbondale reported 50 degrees. In Indiana at South Bend, 39, 44 at both Lafayette and Indianapolis. Terre Haute reported 43 degrees and Evansville checked in with 45. Willard Airport reported sunny skies at the top of the hour. The temperature, 42, the dew point, 31, the relative humidity, 64%, the wind out of the west at 10, the barometric pressure, 30.13. And steady. And at 12:39, 43 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois.
WILL programs are made possible by English Hedgerow, a special event full-service florist on the corner of University and Lincoln Avenue, Urbana. English Hedgerow delivers distinctive bouquets, plants, and gift baskets throughout the Champaign-Urbana area.
Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker has officially taken nearly all collective bargaining rights away from the vast majority of the state's public employees. Walker signed the bill to do so, signed the bill privately this morning. He plans an afternoon news conference in the Capitol. The explosive measure passed the assembly on Thursday following more than 3 weeks of protests that drew tens of thousands of people to the Capitol in opposition. The Senate cleared the way for passage with a surprise move Wednesday that allowed them to vote on the bill without 14 Democratic senators present. Meanwhile, thousands of union members yesterday flooded streets outside the Indiana State House. Demonstrators hope to stop measures they fear are worse than in Wisconsin. Michael Puente of public radio station WBEZ reports.
It's usually a two-hour drive from the northwest Indiana city of Portage to Indianapolis. Yesterday morning, I-65 was covered in snow, so the trip was more like a slick three-hour odyssey. This did not dampen the spirits of a busload of steelworkers when they arrived at the Indiana State House. Hey! The vice president of Local 6787, Pete Trinidad, said he came down to lend his voice.
We disagree with what our politicians are doing down here, and if we don't come down and have our voice heard, then they're going to say, well, you didn't say anything, so we just went ahead and did it. We didn't want that to happen.
In some ways, the stakes are higher for organized labor in Indiana than they are in Wisconsin. You see, the issue of public workers' collective bargaining rights is old hat in the Hoosier State. Indiana's Republican Governor Mitch Daniels stripped state workers of such rights back in 2005. GOP legislators took control of both chambers this year, and they took their own swipe at organized labor. The first bill Republicans introduced this session would strip public school teachers of most collective bargaining rights. Another bill would make Indiana a so-called right-to-work state. Basically, companies would no longer require union membership as a condition of employment. Republicans say this would make Indiana more economically competitive. Union member Pete Trinidad doesn't buy it, so he took part in yesterday's demonstration, one of the largest in Indiana's history. Trinidad says the GOP's first bill targeted teachers, but it won't stop there.
They try to choose one spot, start a crack, and the crack goes all the way across. We can't do that. We're all together in this.
This battle is about more than money.
Dozens of speakers addressed a crowd that lined up near the Indiana State House. And despite the chilly temps, chanting continued for hours.
Day 18, to stand and to be heard.
But inside the Capitol, things were quiet. One reason is that House Democrats have boycotted the past 3 weeks of this session. They don't have enough votes to stop the GOP's agenda, But without Democrats, the House can't do its work because there's no quorum. But a Senate Democrat was there, eager to take jabs at Republicans.
And what happened in Wisconsin yesterday, it was terrible.
That's Lonnie Randolph, a veteran Democrat state senator from East Chicago.
Indiana, Wisconsin, Ohio, that's not by chance all this is happening. If they weaken labor, they weaken the biggest contributor and supporter for the Democratic Party.
Randolph saw the crowd outside. He says Republicans are overreaching.
They've waken up a sleeping giant, in my opinion. The people that came down here today, these are just average, everyday people, working people with families. They're just barely making it from paycheck to paycheck. And what you're doing is you're hitting them in the pocket. This is going to go on until the people get some relief.
It turns out the pro-union demonstrators were preaching to the converted Thursday because Republican leaders weren't in the Indiana Capitol either. They called the day off. Maybe it's a fitting demonstration of their confidence they'll prevail. Brian Bosma, the House Majority's Republican leader, said as much in recent days.
There's always room for compromise. I'm not going to concede to a list of demands, and I'm never going to concede to that, particularly when it's only 37 people trying to tell the remaining 63 what to do.
Bosma said pro-union Democrats are missing something. Republicans have power, and they ought to. They got the most votes in this historically Republican-leaning state. So Bosma feels the GOP can wait things out long after the union noise dies down, though that could take a while. Unions planned more demonstrations for next week. Reporting from Indianapolis, Michael Puente, WBEZ.
Microsoft has breathed new life into its Xbox 360 game player by pairing it with a new wireless controller called the Kinect. The company announced yesterday that it has sold more than 10 million Kinects since the product was introduced in November. That makes it the fastest-selling consumer electronic device in history, NPR's Zoe Chase reports.
Ernest Crumline came into the store to buy a Wii. He saw the Kinect demonstration set up and said he had to try it. The game works like this. You have to mirror the moves of the guy on the screen, and the Kinect reads what your body is doing. If you get the moves right to the Soulja Boy Tell'em dance, in this case, you get points. The runaway success of the Kinect means you're going to see a lot more devices like this coming from Microsoft.
Microsoft is working hard to have you interact with lots of screens throughout the day. So a screen in your nursery that monitors what's happening with your baby.
Amy Webb consults with top tech companies, and she says that sophisticated sensor technology in your own home is going to be the new normal because consumers are loving it and they're willing to pay.
So that's $233.17.
The sticker price of the Kinect is $150, but Crumline had to buy the dance game too.
And I bought insurance for it because more than likely this is going to fall because I'm going to buggy.
That works for Microsoft. Zoe Chase, NPR News.
Music fans have flocked to the internet to find music with, to put it mildly, with great enthusiasm. But very few investors have found a way to turn all that downloading and streaming into dollars. There are signs, however, that may be changing. NPR's Laura Seidel has that story.
The road to success in the online music industry isn't so much strewn with abandoned cars as it is with a bunch of idling vehicles. Services like Rhapsody, for which you pay a monthly subscription fee to stream a library of songs, have 750,000 subscribers and holding. Spotify, another subscription service based in Europe, has 10 million people who use it for free by watching ads, but only 1 million paying subscribers. Still, Drew Lerner, president of RDO, a newly opened subscription service, is ready to hit the road.
If I were to say that this was going to be easy and it was going to happen like that, I would sound naive.
What's making Lerner optimistic is that technology, especially mobile tech, is evolving in ways that he thinks will make subscription services more appealing. Specifically,
the adoption of smartphones and the increasing ability of those smartphones to deliver a great experience because of connectivity and the capacity on these phones.
RDO has nearly 8 million songs available for streaming in any order you like for $10 a month. The company's Marisol Siegel was watching American Idol the other night.
Guy sung this Luther Vandross song, and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to listen to Luther Vandross right now. And I grabbed my phone while I was watching Idol and synced Luther Vandross to my phone, so then in the morning, when I was going to work, I could listen to Luther.
Siegel can also stream those songs from the web on her computer or through a connected TV.
I've kind of got it wherever I need it to be.
The company, which was founded by the creators of Skype, just got more than $17 million in venture capital funding. Pandora, the streaming online music service, reached profitability and it's about to go public. Songkick, which lets fans track artists they like and buy concert tickets, just got nearly $2 million in extra funding. And this week, Moog announced a deal with BMW to put its on-demand streaming service in cars using a smartphone plug-in. But there have been a lot of failures, and that's kept many investors away. Mike McGuire, an analyst with Gartner who follows online music, notes that many of the companies are offering very different kinds of service, whether it be ticket sales or streaming music or downloads. He thinks real profitability will require those companies to offer all of these services together.
Beyond simply providing the music, which is a great service, but also finding those other music-related transaction opportunities that can be kind of layered into the platform.
But there are a lot of investors who still remain wary of anything connected to music, online or otherwise. David Packman, a venture capitalist who was an early investor in eMusic, is keeping his checkbook in his pocket.
I don't think that there's a promised model that revitalizes everything and makes this a lucrative market segment.
Packman notes the following. Overall music sales were down more than 2% last year, and the industry's great hope, digital downloads, were flat. He points out that Apple's success with iTunes hasn't really been financial. The company's money comes from iPod, iPad, and other hardware sales. The four major record labels, while more open to licensing to online companies, haven't exactly made it easy.
You still have to pay advances. Essentially, as a startup, you still have to take all the risk.
Packman is not exactly sold that mobile technology will make online music a profitable business when so many people have gotten used to getting their music for free. Laura Seidel, NPR News, San Francisco.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Radio Maria in downtown Champaign. Along with their dinner menu, tapas is served every evening until 2 a.m. Lunch is also served on Friday from 10:30 to 2:30 and brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Information on menus and wine and beer lists is at RadioMariaRestaurant.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 11th of March, 2011. It's the birthday of the children's book author Ezra Jack Keats, born Jacob Ezra Katz in New York City in 1916, the third child of Jewish immigrants from Warsaw. Ezra Jack Keats, famous for bringing the streets of New York to life for young readers, one of the first mainstream children's book authors to use urban settings for his stories. And he was the first to feature black children as main characters. Today is Johnny Appleseed Day, when we honor John Chapman, who died around this time in 1845 in Indiana.